The subject for the night is the I may just have to turn this off, so bear with me just a minute.
Okay. We'll try this and see what happens.
We still there? Yeah, let's try that. Well, what we're trying tonight, we're going to talk about the things, the foods that we eat that we're supposed to stay away from. Now, if we look at our canned goods, of course they have no telling what type of fluid surrounding the food, but we know we're also supposed to stay away from our soda. We're supposed to stay away from the acidic coffee. The coffee, of course, makes it a very acidic drink. Now, we know that the soda takes 30 to 32 glasses of water, alkaline water with a pH of 8, to neutralize one Coke or one soda. Now, what makes it so acidic? The Coke has citric acid in it. Now, most people would say, well, if the citric acid couldn't be all bad, it's bound to come from some type of citrus fruit. But when we think about it, it comes from fermented white potatoes. Most people don't know that. And, of course, they put it in there to give it that little zing. When, in effect, the acidic part of that soft drink is not really that good for us. Now, the pharmaceuticals that we come in contact with, they also have a tendency to take the pH of our body out of the normal range. So if we're looking at foods that we need to really start staying away from, we're looking at canned goods, which most people take right out of a can and don't even rinse the liquid surrounding the peas or beans or whatever's inside of the food. The canned drinks, the coffee, the tea, the different pills that to so many people are hooked on, the dairy products, of course, that come into our lives on a daily basis also have a tendency to make our body very acidic. So other things that we need to try to stay away from are the shots, the flu vaccine. We should stay away from the vaccines itself. There's all types of impurities and no telling what the people running the research projects are supposed to come up with. But we know that they have been for a long time. One good example of this is the Gulf War vaccination, which all people in most of the different branches of the military that had a possibility of even going to the Far East had to take. Now, we do know that the Gulf War syndrome vaccine was developed by a pharmaceutical company in southern Texas. As I said before, it was the large owner in that pharmaceutical company was, of course, ex-President George Bush. And I understand that they did some of their research actually in one of the prisons down in South Texas. Now, we find out that the inmates started coming down with these various ailments. And I will go over what the ailments were in just a short period of time. But from the infected prisoners, then they gave rise to the guards, and then the guards went home and gave the infection to their families, and then we started seeing that there was definitely a problem. We found out that most people, even the ones that did not go to the Gulf War, even though they had the vaccination, still came down with the Gulf War syndrome. Now, many people in the government and in the military, especially in the veterans hospitals, denied that there was such a thing as the Gulf War syndrome. They more or less said, well, you need to eat right, you need to exercise, you need to do this, you need to do that. But they really wouldn't ever come out and say that, you know, we did this testing and everybody got sick. And I was talking to one associate the other day, telling him about this, and he said, well, he felt that these people got sick because they drank diet drinks that had been sitting in the desert with temperatures over 100. And, of course, we know when diet soft drinks, with the exception of one, use aspartame to sweeten the product. Now, aspartame, if you use, if you let it get into a heated area, such as outside in the sun, it's going to immediately separate, and one of the byproducts, of course, is methanol, or wood alcohol, rather. And I think the other one is formaldehyde. So here we are, because they had to rush this product through to use it in their soda industry and other things. They didn't do the testing, and they did find out a way, though, that this NutraSweet could cause major problems. And, of course, it's still wreaking havoc with people losing their ability to think and severe headaches and many, many other things that some people today, and like I said last night, though, usually when you go to a medical seminar or some type of professional seminar, it doesn't even have to be in the medical field, most of the people are drinking Diet Cokes. Well, you know, you would expect our professions that try to heal us would be more up on the things that make us sick. But lo and behold, these people really aren't. They're so in tune with the things that are making their patients sick, they really don't consider why they're so sick. And it was funny, one of the people on the same network that has a line of many different health products used to keep announcements of professionals that died at an early age because they had such poor health techniques and different things that we have so many professionals that because they don't have time to read and study what they should, they're getting as sick as their patients. So this is a reason why we should start thinking about our naturopaths, our homeopaths, getting back to supplements, getting back to the old cures that were so good for our grandparents and great-grandparents, the techniques that were used, the Indians passed on that would do so many things completely clear up. One thing in particular that many people seem to forget is that silver was used for a long time to treat many different forms of infection and internal problems. I'm speaking specifically about colloidal silver. And colloidal silver was used back before the pharmaceutical industry got its foothold in the door, especially with the medical community. Now, a farmer might take a dime, throw the dime in the milk, and the milk would stay without bacteria for a few days longer than it would naturally. So it's time really to start looking, reading some of these books that go against what we have been taught all of our life. Now, another thing we need to really take a close look at, you know, the Father gave us a list of the clean and the unclean meats. And it's so easy for these Judeo-Christian preachers today to say, oh, don't worry about that. You know, that has all been nailed to the cross. He's cleaned everything. You don't have any problem. You can eat all of this stuff, and you're not going to have a problem. Well, you know, it's real easy to say that when you look at most of these big old fat preachers that are out there. I'm thinking about one in particular that he probably ought to think about gluttony as a sin. But these preachers are in very poor health, and certainly they're probably first in line when there's a big old juicy ham for Easter to get that second helping, or, you know, maybe a crab dish, or, you know, get that extra order of fried shrimp, or, you know, just many different things. Well, let's just kind of think for a second. Why did the Father give us a list of unclean meats? Well, he knew that he put these particular animals, the pig being one, and all the other animals that come behind as scavengers and clean the earth, they eat meat that is spoiled, that is bad, that died for some reason, and when they eat it, of course, it goes into the food. Now, there's no form of cooking that will eliminate all of this bad stuff in the meat. So when you talk about unclean meats, even catfish, of course, is being farm-raised right now, and of course, it certainly has to be better than the catfish in the streams and the rivers that were caught for so many years. But still, the catfish is a scavenger, and it eats everything it can find off of the bottom. Now, if you will remember back when I was in Andrews, I talked about a fertilizer spill on a lake in Florida that had happened 10 to 15 years before this research project was performed. Now, we have to ask ourselves, and the problem with this was that so many of the male and female alligators were not able to reproduce their own kind. When they went in to investigate, they found out that these alligators were a product far into the future of what the fertilizer spill had done many, many years before. Now, even though after the fertilizer spill, of course, the different agencies came in and they tested the water and they did what they could, but they said that it was okay, that they had it had diluted itself and everything would be fine. But years down the road, they started digging up the bottom of the lake, and they found out that all of these bad products that came from this fertilizer spill were, of course, on the bottom of the lake. Now, who lives on the bottom of the lake? Well, you know, we have, of course, the bad byproducts probably getting into the plankton, into the plants that live on the bottom, but then you have your tadpoles, and you have your crawfish, and you have, depending on where it is, your shrimp and your crabs and different things like that. And, of course, if they're on the bottom, there's a good possibility that they're going to pick up all of these things. So we have to be very, very careful when we think that the Father has cleaned the unclean foods in the last days, when we know for a fact that because of all the pollution and the bad things that have been dumped, radioactive material for one, that if any animal or organism on the earth is going to get something, it's going to be on the bottom dwellers on the bottom of lakes and streams and oceans. So this is a reason why we should be very, very careful with regard to shellfish. We know that many, many people have violent reactions to shellfish. We have to know that these shellfish have to be, they have to absorb all the impurities and probably mercury and different things that are into the water. And then, of course, that impurity or that poison stays in the meat. And, of course, it may not affect them. Of course, it could affect them. But it's probably going to affect whatever's up the food chains that's going to have that animal for lunch. So we have to be careful about the unclean foods and have to consider, well, do I really want to stay healthy? Do I want to keep my body temple clean and pure and ready for the Father Spirit to enter me? Or am I going to eat that extra order of shrimp that may make me sick, those crabs that are so good, those crawfish that are so good, that extra plate of catfish? You know, he said, don't eat stuff that comes out of the water with the skin. Make sure it has fins and scales. So we can't have shark, and we can't have many, many different things that just have a skin. So let's think about, well, what can we have with regard to good food? Well, we know we need to eat fresh vegetables. We need to eat fruit. We need to eat, we need to have good, pure water, and a lot of it. You know, they say that you should drink half of your weight in ounces of water. So if you're 100 pounds, you should drink at least 50 ounces of water a day. Now, is that water out of the town's water supply? No, it's not. Let's go for something that's been purified. It's been gravitationally purified or cleansed. It's either distilled water or even some bottled water. You could ask for an analysis on the different waters that you get in bottles, and the manufacturers will be glad to provide that for you. I came across an email the other day that more or less stated that some water companies, in order to comply with what they think is right, is now fluoridating their bottled water. I just spoke with a water salesman probably 2 hours ago. He was in front of my office, and I went out just asking him a few questions. And I said, I'd like to get an analysis. He says, well, we get one every couple of days. And I asked him, I said, well, is this spring water or is this carbon-filtered water or what is this? And he said, no, this is good spring water. It comes from a free-flowing spring. Oh, that was good. And he told me where it was, and you know, the fact that they do run an analysis every 4 or 5 days, that's real good. And then he said, he says, we also sell distilled water for those that want it. And then the very last thing he said was, oh, and by the way, we now sell water that has fluoride in it. Of course, I am not an advocate for fluoride. I've seen too many problems and too many altered reports that are supposed to be the reasons why most townships and agencies think that fluoride is so good for their people, when in effect the fluoride that they're putting in the water is not the fluoride that really is good for the body or for the teeth. So it is more detrimental than it is good. So we have to be watchful, because you might think something to be good, it doesn't necessarily mean that it is good. We have to be very, very mindful. We have to watch. And like Dr. Jack in North Carolina taught me, you never assume anything to be good or pure. You have to read the labels. You have to be very careful. You have to evaluate the things that are ingredients in different things. And you also can't be 100% certain, because a lot of manufacturers now are not putting all of the ingredients on their list of ingredients on the back. I went into a very good specialty grocery store one day, and I was interested in getting some chicken or turkey smoked sausage, that type of thing, to use. And certainly, I found a very expensive thing of sausages. It was made of chicken, but I didn't look on the back. Of course, most of the people in our group follow the food laws as well as they can. You can't be 100% certain in everything that you do, but everybody tries to do the best that they can. So I got back to start cooking those things. And, of course, someone looked on the back, and lo and behold, the skins that the sausage were in were from a pig, even though it said all chicken. So, you know, you have to say, well, if they are trying to make you believe it's all chicken and there's pork in here, there are probably some other things in there that that you may not want in your body. So another thing we need to think about is if there's ever an opportunity for you to have a choice with homegrown, organic food, even something that's been canned and put away, please eat that over something you can get in a can. You know, they put that in a can, and it has preservatives in it. We don't know what those preservatives do over a long period of time. You know, they say you are what you eat. Well, you know, it's unfortunate that so many of us have allowed the big corporations to decide for us what we need, when in effect, it's not good at all, but they might save money by using one thing over another, and it could well be harmful. So we need to evaluate, and we need to be mindful and watchful, because if we aren't, nobody else is going to be either. Now, let's look at another, I'm going to try to skip around a little bit tonight to give you some information, but let's talk about the West Nile virus tonight. I have an article written by Lynn Landis, and it was out of a magazine called The Crusader. I talked about a little bit of it last night. The main article on the front of the page was the mycoplasma. Now, it says, what do you do about the West Nile virus? Don't do anything, it says. It has a smell of a manufactured crisis. It says the news on the West Nile is a disturbing combination of hype, confusion, distortion, and omission. Take a look at the Centers for Disease Control website for West Nile virus update, and go to the current case count, and you'll see a startling variation in the incidence of West Nile infections and fatalities from state to state, and even within the same region. And the writer says, it kind of makes me wonder a little bit. On a daily basis, TV reporters raise the alarm, of course, maybe not as much now as they were back in October, but TV reporters raise the alarm and breathlessly announce new cases of West Nile, but it's hard to tell if they're talking about fatalities or infections. We're told that both the children and the elderly are most at risk, when in fact the children are the least at risk for the disease, according to the CDC, but most at risk for the toxic effects of the pesticides and the mosquito repellents. You know, that's really something we need to really consider is, you know, they're spraying poison for these mosquitoes, and do you ever breathe any of that in? And if so, what is the long-term effect on the human body? You know, that stuff is absorbed through the skin. It goes into the nasal passages. You know, is it as poisonous as the chemtrails that they're spraying? Uh-oh. Sounds like we're down to the bottom of the hour. We'll try to finish the West Nile virus at the end of the break. We'll be back in two. This is Shepherd's Call. I'm sitting in for Pastor Buddy and Dr. Harry. Well, praise Yahweh, everybody. This is Dr. Gary, and I'm filling in for Pastor Buddy one more time. He's having a well-deserved little break. One thing we need to talk about, of course, is, like I mentioned, the thing that's mostly at risk with the West Nile virus is the fact of the spraying of the diphtheriocides and mosquito repellents. Both the CDC and the state public health agencies give out general information about the number of victims, but not specific data on individual victims that may shed light on the medical reality of this so-called crisis. The virus is characterized as new and dangerous when it's not significantly different from viruses that have been in the United States for decades. The West Nile may be a nasty experience for a very few, fatal for an exceedingly rare number, but as diseases go, it's no big deal. There are about 40 different types of mosquitoes that can carry viruses that could cause encephalitis. They're common in many parts of the U.S. and breed in places like tire dumps. So, what's unique about the West Nile? Not much, according to Rael Reitard of the Louisiana Department of Health. These humans, West Nile, is almost indistinguishable from the St. Louis virus,
which has been in the U.S. since 1933. Now, here we go. Now, has anybody ever heard of the St. Louis virus? And it's been here since 1933. Dr. Reitard said that there's no difference between the two viruses regarding their symptoms and rates of infection. Less than 1% of persons infected with the West Nile or St. Louis virus will develop severe illness. On the average, St. Louis causes 128 people to be hospitalized every year, although in 1964 that figure went as high as 4,478 cases. In fact, the mortality rate for the St. Louis virus is said to be slightly higher than that for the West Nile virus. What those mosquitoes, the front mile, and now we find out that, wait a minute, all the information about these things isn't coming out like it should, and lo and behold, the spray, the pesticides and the different things that they spray for it may be more harmful and deadly than the actual disease itself. So here we go again. You know, who are we going to believe?
The St. Louis virus is considered a permanent resident of Florida, according to the University of Florida's Cooperative Extension Service. On their website, the Extension Service even questions the effectiveness of spraying pesticides. They even say, why are you spraying pesticides? Noting that by the time of an outbreak, it's already too late. Now, what do you think about that? It's kind of like swatting a big virus with a fly swatter. It's too late. So, and I doubt anyone sprays pesticides for the West Nile in Europe, Africa, Western Asia, or the Middle East where it's common. Now, isn't that interesting? Florida is breeding ground for the St. Louis virus and filled to the gills with the elderly, yet only one person has been infected with the West Nile, according to the CDC, while Louisiana has 205. Now, this article was taken out of the October-November issue of the Crusader. We will make that available for a $6 donation, and it has, of course, the mycoplasma in it and some other things that we need to read about that could well affect our life. But here it says that that Louisiana has 205, Mississippi 91, and Illinois 79. It says, could Florida residents have developed a resistance to both St. Louis and West Nile virus, or to mosquitoes in general, or is something else wrong? The author says, I've been very curious about the alleged victims of the West Nile, so I called the Centers for Disease Control for more information. Incredibly, the CDC press office claims that they don't have information on the exact ages are medical conditions of the alleged fatalities of the West Nile, and only the mean age for cases of infection is 51 years old. And the author states, it says, and that doesn't really jive with press reports that describe victims of infections or fatalities
as usually over 70 years of age. The CDC says that reporters have managed to get some details on the victims, but not from the CDC. The author says, "Well, call me dumb, but not stupid. How did the CDC get the mean age of those who got infected if they don't have the individual ages? They aren't enough cases of West Nile in many states to establish their own mean. How can the CDC make policy and state funding decisions for the West Nile if they don't have the basic facts on its so-called victims? How can they inform, alert, and alarm the public if they're operating in an CDC press office told me that I would have to contact the individual state public health agencies for more. So I called Louisiana and New York, but no luck. They were not releasing the information I sought. It seems I'm not alone in my failure, according to the author. According to the No Spray Coalition, New York City claimed 7 fatalities to the West Nile in 1999. Yet to date, none of the names or medical histories of the deceased have been released. I wonder if that's one of those cases where they say they've got casualties, but they just don't have any bodies. You know, kind of like there were 20,000 casualties at the beginning of the World Trade Center, and now it's down below 3,000 in 2 buildings that should have had a minimum of 30 to 35 to 40,000 people in it every morning. If they started a downward spiral on those stairs, it would have taken that many people with most of the elevators completely closed off. It would have taken those people over 8 hours to get down, and yet there was only less than 3,000 people killed. Boy, that's really a statistic, isn't it? Well, it said, yet to date, none of the names of the medical histories of the deceased have been released. Independent research indicates that all 7 were over 75 years of age. So this is in New York we're talking about. One had a serious heart condition. 2 had cancer and heavy chemotherapy, which of course we know that chemotherapy completely destroys the killer cells that fight cancer on a normal basis in everybody that cancer strikes. But if your autoimmune system's destroyed, then just about anything can kill you. Then it said, and all had bad immune systems. No death was histologically connected with WNV, a cause of death. The author said, why not release the victim information? Could it be that if the public were to understand that the so-called victims really had serious underlying medical conditions, that it would put an end to the panic and an end to the pesticide spraying that was probably the cause of most of the deaths that occurred? Pardon me for being suspicious, but in my mind, is it not surprising that states like Louisiana, Mississippi, and Illinois are claiming some of the highest rates for the West Nile? They've had a long love affair with the chemical industry, Louisiana especially. That cozy relationship could contribute to the high number of victims in any number of troubling ways. West Nile is a virus that we will learn to live with and should refuse to get excited about. What's alarming is a pesticide industry that does more harm than good. A public health service that withholds the facts and a press corps that seems incapable of asking the tough questions. and it talks that Lynn Landes is a freelance journalist specializing in environmental issues. She's been a radio show host and a regular commentator for a BBC radio program. Lynn writes a weekly column which is published on her website, which is www.ecotalk.org, and reports environmental news for DUTV in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So if anyone would like to get a copy of this booklet, Mycoplasma Used as a Weapon, and of course this article's in there about the West Nile, if you're interested, you can call my office, and which is 877-289-7439. That's 877-289-7439. While we have a little break here, I would like to ask all of you, you know, for the last several nights I've asked, please, to give me a radio check. I tried to do that over at least the last three nights. I think last night I may not have stressed it as much, but we're in a real pickle here. It appears that even though I've asked for everyone to call, I know that some people will never call, even if we're giving away money, but we need to know if you're out there listening. Now, there have been several people call. I've had, I think, three or four calls of people that I know are listening anyway, but we need to know if you're out there listening, and there's a reason for this. You know, it takes a great deal of money when we're not raising money from the general public on this program, but it takes a lot of money to put this program out over the air. And if there's no one out there to listen to it, even though we try to do what we can, there's really no reason we should continue this program. Now, if there are enough of you out there that respond to a radio check, of course, we'll continue the program. But if there's nobody out there, it takes a great deal of preparation in order to keep this program going for 5 days in a row. And then, of course, we have another program on WWCR, which is 6 o'clock Eastern on Sunday evenings at 5.070. Now, if there's no one out there and nobody responds, we will have to end our show on Truth Radio, and we'll have to try to do what we can on a limited budget and go on another shortwave channel. I hate to do that because WWCR does not have a satellite that can be picked up by so many people with big dishes, and WWCR does not have an internet feed. So we need you to please call in. If you enjoy this program, if you learn anything, if you appreciate what we do, please give us a radio check. I'm going to give you that number one more time, 877-289-7439. You can also call Pastor Buddy. He's home tonight, 423-626-2172. That's area code 423-626-2172. Now, if we get a large enough response, of course, we will try to stay on Truth. But if we don't hear from anybody as much as we have asked for a radio check, then we have to assume that no one's out there. And we've known for a long time that we did have a large audience, but at least we thought we had a partial audience. So if you would, please get off the couch, go pick up the phone and give my answer machine a call, or call Pastor Buddy, just to let us know that you care and you would like for us to continue the program. Now, let's talk about pesticide spraying poses death risk to humans. Public health author exposes bogus West Nile virus policy. Spraying pesticides to combat mosquitoes suspected of carrying the West Nile virus has not been scientifically proven to either be safe for humans or effective against the disease. According to the award-winning public health author and emerging disease expert, and that, of course, is Dr. Horowitz, spraying with malathion, a suspected human chemical carcinogen and known immune system blocker, or its alternate, Anvil 1010 violates a basic tenet of public health practice that requires prior knowledge of the risk and proven benefits of the policy before it is implemented. In the light of substantial evidence linking exposure to airborne chemical compounds with cancer and genetic damage in various species throughout the food chain, political and public health officials are urged to cease and desist this lethal and imprudent practice immediately, or possibly face class action litigations, if not anti-government reprisals. Based on government documents reprinted in the author's 530-page book, Death in the Air, Globalism, Terrorism, and Toxic Warfare, even the origin of the West Nile virus and declarations concerning its emergence along eastern coastal states is questionable, if not suspicious. Studies of related encephalitis viruses were pioneered during the late 1930s in the West Nile district of northwest Uganda, home to the Rockefeller family-funded International Agency for Research Institute report by the Army's sixth leading biological weapons contracting firm,
collaborating with the IARC and Rockefeller University, cited the encephalitis agent among a group of bioengineered pathogens being tested at that time. Most suspiciously, according to U.S. Senate reports, Rockefeller University President Dr. Joshua Lederberg, a bioterrorism expert for the Council on Foreign Relations, directed the American-type culture collection to ship a variety of lethal biologicals, including the West Nile virus, to Saddam Hussein's military laboratories for months preceding the Gulf War. Dr. Lederberg, along with other bioweapons testing advocates, Colonel Jerry Hauer, head of the Office of Emergency Management for the City of New York during 1999's West Nile virus emergence, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advisor Colonel Thomas Manas of AuraVe Corporation, makers of the only West Nile virus vaccine, along with President Clinton and Janet Reno in the Trump room at the White House a year before the alleged West Nile virus outbreak in New York. Arrangements were then made to rescue the insolvent Oravax Corporation with a $303 million contract from the CDC for a smallpox vaccination, a $1.8 million contract from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases for a vaccine against Dengue fever, and additional funds to stockpile the West Nile vaccine for future emergencies. The evidence indicates the entire field of public health and the majority of humanitarians serving advance it has been undermined by unscrupulous parties in what amounts to a alien iatrogenocide. That is, Dr. Horwitz explained, false threats of biological urgencies are being promoted by agents and agencies primarily for financial reward. Well, what do you know about that? In this millennium, the arenas of public health and economic espionage merge, and control over the entire process is lost by informed citizens, honest policymakers, and legitimate investigator for whom I wrote Death in the Air. Now, here we go again. You know, they come up with a problem and they always have a solution. You know, all the people that are coming into the United States today are going to present the problem, and then they're going to have the solution. What's that going to be? Well, they're already talking about Homeland Security. And you know what the symbol for the Homeland Security is that I heard today? It is a pyramid with an all-seeing eye on top of it.
Well, doesn't that just beat all? They are going to come up with martial law, implants, roadblocks, United Nations troops in the streets, and everybody's cheering for Go George Go. Boy, he's got them all fooled, doesn't he? Well, you know, the father may have a surprise in store for him, but you know we're going to go through the fire. The fire's coming. It's only a matter of time. We've allowed the enemy in. They've bound the strong man, and now we're going to reap the benefits of what we've done. You know, it's time to wake up. It's time to quit believing everything that they say on TV, everything they say is a threat, you know, all the nukes that were supposed to have gone off, and then they went after Osama bin Laden. Like one man said, he's got another videotape has just, or an audio tape has just come up that supposedly Osama bin Laden made. And one man said, you know, it's real easy for Osama to have the most sophisticated tracking devices, the most sophisticated cell phones, the most sophisticated everything, and he can't even afford a $20 tape recorder to make a decent tape. So here, I guess he's just released something, and now we're going to have we're going to be able to solve another problem with regard to Osama, and he's really behind all of it, and he's probably admitting it this time. So the only thing I can say is when they're spraying, get inside. Oppose the spraying. You know, spraying for mosquitoes, like they said, by the time that the mosquitoes are out biting, spraying is too late. The damage has already been done. You know, if spraying for mosquitoes is poisonous, and like the article made the statement that Malathion is not that effective anyway, but people, when they get in their houses, they think nothing of the oven cleaners that they spray on and all those fumes get in their lung, all the detergents and the bleaches and every kind of cleaner in the world that sprays on and foams up and gets it in your lungs. What is that doing to us too? You know, that's like the lady that wanted to really clean her commodes good, so she thought she'd come up with a winner. So she put Clorox and ammonia in the same bucket. It cleaned her all right. She's now 6 feet under. You know, these products can kill you. If you get a big enough whiff of them, they're going to kill you, and it's going to be the elderly that can't tolerate this type of stuff. So it's time to oppose the spraying, get a grip on these things, and not be carried away by everything you see on the cable news network or the other programs that insist we're at risk. It's time to turn off the TV, get your radios out, get the shortwave radios, get the internet radios, get the satellite radios. Do something, improve your mind, do a little research on your own. You know, the Father said, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We have to be the dumbest people that have been on the earth in a long time because we believe everything that the Republican Party says or everything that the Democrats say, when in effect, if they were put up in your neighborhood to head neighborhood watch, most of those people couldn't even get elected. They're only elected for one reason, folks. They have the big boys' money behind them. It's time. Well, friends, there's our cue. It's we sell Miracle Tea soap. You could call me at 877-289-7439. Dr. Jack at 888-281-7320. Ask your buddy again, 423-626-2172. I enjoyed bringing it to you. Check with us on WWCR, 6 o'clock Eastern, Sunday night, 5070. Praise Yahweh. Shalom.
Thank you for listening to the Shepherd's Call. We hope you'll join us each evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on this same station. Praise Yahweh.